We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.
Hey everyone, welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone U. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob, and you're listening to episode number 341. Thank you for being with us. It's a beautiful day in Albuquerque. Actually, it's a little windy and cold. Colder.
A little windy for flying today.
Yeah, it is.
But I still wanted to fly and get some photos of the mountain this morning. The
nice fog,
the waves,
huh?
Coming down.
Yeah, it was really
so cool.
Did you get some?
Well, no, I haven't. No, we had to get started right away, and I know we've got a busy schedule, and there's so much to do here at Drone U, and blah, blah,
blah. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
yada,
gosh.
Yada, yada.
I really,
as they say.
I really enjoy every minute I get alone now. I'm not kidding.
No offense taken.
Yeah. It's just, I can only handle so much, and I'm learning that point because I've been pushing the boundary. So,
I hear you.
Just like we all do. But Rob, what's your feeling on buying used cars?
Oh, wow. Would you look at it the same way, though? I mean, I kind of obviously...
Look at what the same way?
Buying a used car versus buying a used drone. I mean, I get where you're going with this, but I just see them as apples and bananas.
In the sense that... I agree, but I have a point that I want to make. So,
okay.
But go ahead.
Well, in the sense that for the money, I just don't see a reason to buy a used drone. I mean, save up the extra few hundred bucks.
Yeah.
Especially if you're talking a P3 Pro... that now has a newer version through the P4. You can get good deals on a new P3 Pro. I just don't like the idea of a used one.
Yeah, and you know, I would say it like this. You know, with used cars, we have Carfax reports, right? We have ways to check the regular maintenance of the vehicle.
Yep.
With airplanes, right? If we're buying a Cessna 182, if we're buying a P51, which by the way, we're going to need one of those. Anyway, for all of you aviation enthusiasts, you know what I'm talking about. That's cool. I think it's like, I don't even know where they go for now, but they're a few hundred thousand dollars. But anyway, it's an old Mustang. It's an awesome, awesome old Warbird. Anyway, my point is that there's always maintenance records. And a lot of people don't keep maintenance records on their drones. It's not something that people do regularly.
In fact, most probably don't.
Most probably don't. Now, there is a couple things if you are, and we should probably just get into today's question, which is all about whether or not you should buy a used or a new drone. In case you haven't figured that out. But one thing I will say is that I would never buy a drone unless there was a maintenance record.
Well, a maintenance record, you know what? Let's listen to the question. What do you think?
Yeah, no, today we're going to teach you what should you look out for if you're buying a used drone. Should you buy a used drone? Should you not buy a used drone? Anyway, today's question is brought to you by... Are you a drone pilot? Are you operating under a Section 353 exemption? Then you may be familiar with Item 27, which requires you to get a property release for every flight over property.
Legal Flyer is an app for iPhone and iPad that helps you create professional property releases in less time than it takes to do a pre-flight check.
You can add your pilot info, you can sign in, hand it to the property owner for their signature. But wait a second. Legal Flyer's advanced integration automatically adds latitude, longitude, and even altitude.
Then add a panorama straight from the app. Everything drops into a single-page PDF you can share with a single tap. It's compliance at light speed. Visit LegalFlyer.com for more information or get it straight from the App Store. Legal Flyer, property releases for professional drone pilots.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Rob. It's Mark in Grand Junction, Colorado. Had a two-part question for you. Second part just came up a few minutes ago as I was flying. So the first question, I've been flying a Phantom 3 Pro for 6 or 8 months. It actually belongs to the company I work for, so I've been considering purchasing one for myself for personal use. If for nothing else, I will feel more free to be more aggressive and take more risks with the drone as far as flying close to obstacles, that type of thing. And for that reason, sticking with the Phantom 3 Pro, since I do have access to some additional batteries, that type of thing. So if purchasing a used one, wanted to see if you have any comments or thoughts on things to look out for, things to check for if looking at a used one, as far as, for instance, the cracks under the motor mounts, that type of thing. Any other issues you know of that should be looked at specifically? Or would you recommend not doing it at all? And then as far as number of flights, number of hours of flight, any comments or thoughts there? Second part, again, just happened as I was flying on my way home from work. While it was in the air, started hearing a pretty loud whining sound coming from it, kind of a whining or whirring sound coming from it. So I went ahead and brought it down. Everything looked fine. Restarted the props, and only three of the four restarted. One of them actually did not turn. And then it popped up an ESC error on the DJI Go app. So that was very strange. Powered it down, changed the battery, fresh battery, restarted, started fine that time. Flew it a few feet off the ground, still making the same noise. Seemed to behave a little bit different when telling it to go up in elevation, and something just seems off with that one. So I wanted to see if you'd ever heard of that. And to, I guess, along the lines of a used machine, is that something I need to worry about as far as life expectancy of motors or ESCs? I know you've flown hundreds of hours on those without issue, so this is probably an exception to the rule, but wanted to see what you think. And I guess I'll have to let y'all know how my DJI warranty experience goes. Thanks, guys. Appreciate all your work.
Lots of questions there, Rob.
Yeah, actually very detailed. Thanks, Mark, for the question and the detailed nature of it. That actually is very helpful in terms of answering it, because we get a lot of more generalized questions and they're more challenging to answer. So
let's answer the easy question first. He said that he was having a whining noise, that he brought the drone down, one motor wouldn't start, and then he flew again. If you have an ESC error, if you're seeing a motor error for whatever reason, my first and foremost recommendation would be to not fly, period. Don't test it unless it's inside. You really don't know what could happen. You could have, I think Mark was very lucky in the sense that he didn't have an ESC total failure, because he would have lost the whole bird.
Right.
And that's the thing. Even at 10, 15 feet, depending on what you land on, you could literally lose the whole thing. So, you know, if you have that type of problem, see, that's something that you would put in your maintenance schedule or your maintenance, logbook. Which is something, go ahead.
By the way, if you had a 333, that would be something that you should put on your report, right?
Correct.
That kind of event.
That is absolutely correct. I'm pretty sure with your 333 too, they tell you to not fly until it has been fixed and you have logged it and you've done a test flight before you go out.
Right.
So at least, I mean, if
Which
that is,
sense.
Yeah, if that's not the procedure, it should be.
Yeah.
That being said, if you have a motor failure, though, or a motor error, sometimes that can be as simple as just there's some sand in the motor, and you can take a duster and get the sand out of the motor. But if that doesn't work, then, yeah, you need to send it to DJI or an authorized dealer to have it fixed. Personally, for me, I would rather just send it to DJI instead of an authorized dealer. Just because I think that they have gotten significantly better in the last year with processing these claims, and it's kind of negating the need for a lot of the dealers.
Yeah, I will say in terms of what we see through the community, the membership and so forth, that we're seeing a lot more positive DJI customer service experiences than negative. You still get the occasional DJI customer service sucks.
Yeah.
But no matter who you are, you're going to get a few of those.
Well, true. And see, the thing is, someone told me one time, they're like, oh, I sent my stuff up to Multicopter Warehouse, blah, 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 blah. But I still had to send it to DJI, which is true.
Right.
A lot of these dealers, if it's not a simple fix, they're sending it to DJI anyway. So why send it to the dealer in the first place?
Sure.
That knowing that information, that's why I've kind of moved away from the dealers, and we've just worked directly with DJI through Amazon, because Amazon holds them accountable.
Right.
So I think that's the best way to go. It's what I've been recommending. So if you need any DJI stuff, go to Amazon.com. That being said, going back to the ESC error, don't fly, send it off to DJI. Now, for the second question, should he get a used drone? There's a couple things you can do. Obviously, you want to look for cracks on the bottom of the motors. You want to make sure every single ribbon cable is perfectly in place.
So you got to take it apart to do that?
No, the ribbon cables are on the gimbal, on the bottom of the gimbal.
Oh, okay.
So you want to make sure that those ribbon cables are perfectly clean. You want to make sure that there are no stress fractures on the frame whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure, too, that the coils on the motors don't look like dark copper. You want like kind of a fresh copper look.
Okay.
You don't want a dark copper look. Also, you should be able to turn the motors with like a flick, and they should spin fine without any issue. Like they should rotate maybe 6-7 times.
Should be a real smooth rotation,
basically. Yeah, it should sound like woof, woof. So
right.
You should do that on every single motor. Also, what I would do, this is what I would do. If the guy's been flying the drone and you take the drone from him and you try to go into the drone to find the logbook of data and flights, it may not be there. I know that there's a way to extract the information, but it's kind of difficult. The easy way to do it is if you have him fire the drone up and make sure he uses the tablet or phone or whatever he normally uses to fly,
right,
and then go into his data logs.
Okay.
And then find out how much he's been flying. Now, he asked the question, you know, what's kind of like the life expectancy of a Phantom? I flew one for, it was about 1,100 hours without an issue, and that was a Phantom 2. Now, I haven't really had that much time on the Phantom 3 because I've been flying the Inspire 1 a lot more, but I got 1,100 hours without an issue. Now, if you actually look at the DJI instruction page and what to expect for your warranty on certain parts, some of the motors, at least on the first Phantom 3, they said you would only get 125, 150 hours out of them. But I know for a fact that you can go much further than that.
And they're being conservative with that, probably for safety reasons, if nothing else.
Yes.
To prepare
you. And I think it's also, you know, limit their liability as well.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
You can fly for a significant amount of time if you take care of your vehicle, which means, you know, you are deep cycling your batteries. You are testing all the screws and making sure that they're all still tight after, say, 20 or 30 flights. You should be inspecting your props. You should not be using them, even if they've hit a blade of grass. And now that there's grass stains on them, that's going to unbalance your prop. And a lot of people don't understand the significance of what that does to the entire bird.
So what, over time, you're not going to see anything from that immediately, but over time, it's putting more stress on the bird.
On everything.
Is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a question for you, if you're going to look at a drone to possibly buy that's used, are you going to pop the lid, so to speak?
No.
There any way to look at anything to see?
Well, back in the day, you could plug it into NASA and figure it out and figure out how many flights it had. But what I would do is, like I said, I would have him turn the drone on, check his flight logs.
Right.
But then also, I would turn the drone on, connect my tablet to it, and connect every single battery that he's selling with it, and see how many times those batteries have been cycled, and then how many times have they been deep cycled, if you can see that. Or just ask him, you know, have you ever deep cycled these batteries?
Yeah.
So I think that's really important, because if you've got batteries with more than, say, 40 or 50 cycles on them, you don't want to buy those batteries. They're not worth anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
they could fail at any moment.
Yeah. And, you know, it also depends on, too, how long has he stored this drone to sell? And then how did he store the batteries when he was selling it? Because if he stored them at full charge and it's been 2 or 3 weeks and they didn't discharge on their own, the batteries are gone. You're not even going to be able to use them. So, and I've made that mistake with the TB-47s. So I know from experience that don't
yeah.
do that.
I would think one other factor is, who are you buying it from? So if you're buying it from a buddy that you've flown with, and you've seen how he takes care of it and so forth, that'd be a lot different than a stranger from Craigslist.
Totally. And let me ask you a question as the finance guy here. How can we buy a used drone and have some sort of protection for ourselves? I mean, can we use some sort of like Capital One credit card? I know people have said, oh, if I put it on credit and I get screwed, whatever, you know, they'll just take the money back from the end user and I'll get my money back. I mean, do you have any advice on that?
I wouldn't rely on that. I really wouldn't. I mean, maybe one way is through eBay, because eBay seems to side with the buyer in terms of getting money back, much to the chagrin of sellers. So that might be one way to protect yourself, is to find one on eBay. But beyond that, I just come back to buying new.
Yeah, and I'm, to be 100% honest, you know, there are not maintenance logs, and a lot of people don't take maintenance logs like you would see on an aircraft. And, you know, there are different classifications of aircraft, Rob. Mm-hmm. There's experimental, and then there's special, essentially. And I'm talking about, like, for example, powered parachute. And the way that those two are looked at is one was built on and worked on by someone else. You don't know who did it. And then one is straight from the factory and has always had their maintenance done by a authorized representative, right, authorized FAA, you know, person, a mechanic. Sure. And it's always, always been logged.
And you're probably going to pay a little bit more for that one.
Absolutely.
But it's going to be worth it.
Yes. I mean, like, in that instance, you're in the aircraft, so you want to find out if something fails while you're up there.
Definitely worth it.
But with your drone, I mean, it's definitely just going to be like in, just a sad moment. But for me, I wouldn't buy used. And also I've sold a drone on eBay before. And if you're looking to sell a drone, don't do it on eBay. The fees are astronomical.
Well, the fees are astronomical. And like I said, if what I've heard, and I've not experienced this, but if something goes wrong, and that could be the person crashes it, but they're just not a good person.
Yep.
And they say it's something that you sold them a faulty drone. I think eBay will go back after you.
I've heard of that, actually.
Yeah, I have too.
So, and we know that with Amazon too, when we were selling lens hoods for a while, that, you know, people would just break them just to break them, and then ask for new ones, and then realize that if they asked for new ones, we would send them new ones. So we stopped selling on Amazon. But that's why I like buying drones on Amazon, is because you have those protections, which is, you know, really nice. But for a seller, it's not so nice. So, and that's why you don't see how many drone dealers on Amazon.
Right.
So, which I find very interesting.
It is interesting.
Did we cover all of his questions? ESCs, life expectancy on motors and ESCs. ESCs tend to go out before motors, in my opinion. Also, some of your ESCs on your home builds, on your DIY stuff, they may be rated for 40 or 50 amps, but sometimes they can't take 40 or 50 amps. And it's something that was brought up in the FPV class when John Casey was teaching the FPV class. He's like, oh, these are 20 amp ESCs. And even though they say they're 20 amp, they're actually rated for 40 amps.
Hmm.
So if you really draw on them, they're not going to fail on you.
Right.
And that's why when you're building your own drone, you got to be really, really careful with ESCs. Castle Creations, in my opinion, makes the best ESCs. T-Motor ESCs are really good, but we've made the mistake of buying cheap ESCs before, and
it didn't go so well.
It will cost you in frustration and mental capacity. Trust me.
Yes, it will. And time and more.
It's a nightmare.
You're going to end up spending the money on the more expensive ESCs anyways, right? So you might as well just get them in the first place.
Everyone's asking us to finish that drone or just build a big racer. I think it's just time for us to build a big racer. So.
Real, a big racer. I don't know what that, because racers are like this big. So what's big racer?
So imagine that Sky Hero 700 class.
Okay.
The camo one.
Yeah.
And we cut the arms down on it.
That's still, even cutting the arms down, that's a pretty massive racer.
Yeah, but if you put, you know, 340 kV motors on it.
That'd be fun.
Exactly.
That'd be fun. All right, let's do it.
Anyway, all right, guys, well, that's going to do it for us today. If you have a question, go to AskDroneU.com, and we'll send you some swag. Always, guys, thank you so much. We really couldn't do this without you, and I mean that. If you love this show, or maybe if you found just one of the shows interesting, likable, or very informative, please write us a review or share the podcast so that other people can find this information as well. And together, we can grow this industry through education. Because, Rob, I think that's the only way it's going to happen, especially with all the stuff that's going on with the John Taylor case. I mean, you heard that the judge dismissed their summary disposition.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, judge, that was dumb. I mean, this was a very clear cut and dry case. There was one law that said you can't do this and another law that said we're going to do it anyway. So the FAA has set a precedent for going completely against Congress and what they're doing. And I think that's also why you're seeing the tone in the media change.
Mm.
When they're not saying FAA rules and laws anymore. They're saying the conglomerate of guidelines that have failed. I mean, the tone has changed. And I love that because it puts pressure on them to do it right. And
yep.
I heard Michael Huerta's comment about, oh, if you've got drone videos, you know, online, take them down. Don't take them down. Post more of them and then send it to them. Anyway, And when you do that, ensure that we're pressuring them to create good rules. You know, it was funny this morning. Someone said to me, you know, Paul, I know you fly all the time, blah, blah, blah. Will you fight the 107 rules if, you know, when they come out? And I said, well, I want there to be laws and regulations.
Of course.
There is no law right now. I mean, right. It's just policy statements based on wacky interpretations. And I just, you know, that's why Congress is down the FAA's throat. That's why you hear senators calling them out on Twitter. Like, you know, if you dig deep enough, the information is there.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I think for society, you know, as Maslow's hierarchy of needs, security is number two or three. We need the security to really function as a society. And I think that the FAA has been tasked to create guidelines, rules, and a law. And I can't wait for it. I think it's really going to set a good precedent. Here's the thing, though. You can't set the bar so high that no one can attain that. And that's what they've done. And I feel like they've pushed more people away. So to answer that person's question from this morning, yes, I plan on complying. But, you know, I also, the 107, the way it looks now is great. But if they have that 500-foot bubble, I think it would make the rebel population, the total anti-FAA people, just go further down.
That much more angry,
yep,
essentially.
And less compliant.
But just remember, it all starts with you in the sense of safety. We've had a couple of people that have asked us to look at their demo reels, and I've been surprised at some of the shots of them flying over groups of people.
And we instantly say, take it down.
Yeah, I mean, you just cannot be doing that kind of stuff.
No, you
follow
can't.
The basic guidelines in terms of safety, which is ultimately what it's all about, right?
Yeah, which is very interesting that
pretty simple.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me, too, that they're so focused on commercial versus hobby because
there's,
you know, and I was thinking about it today, and I said, I could just see a bunch of old men sitting around a table being like, well, the guys who are going to make money are going to take more risk. And then it's like, you think as a young person, it's like, no, they're not, because their business is on the line. Their house is on the line. Their mortgage is on the line. Their car is on the line. Their family's on the line. Like, that's the most asinine thing I've ever heard.
Right.
The person who's going to be the problem is the 18-year-old drunk teenager who goes to Best Buy and buys one and flies it willy-nilly wherever they want and hurts somebody.
Yeah. And some of the stories we've heard, that is what's happened. I don't know about the drunk part, but just flying it very unresponsibly, irresponsibly, that's happening from the hobbyist. Absolutely. So anyways, we all get that that's really stupid.
Yeah, it is. And you guys, we just want to have a world like Mexico where there's only one rule and people fly drones everywhere.
That's a funny way to say it.
I know, right? Because you don't think of Mexico.
We want a world like Mexico.
You don't think of it like, you know, you don't think of Mexico as like a big, developed, safe area. But honestly, like, they are so far ahead of us when it comes to drone law. It literally is disgusting to me.
Like, I will say this, and I might have these out of order, not in the exact order. I just read an article about the least safe cities in the world to visit.
Yes.
I think number one was Mexico City, and I think number two was Detroit, which kind of made me sad. That made me sad, though. No disrespect,
funny.
Detroit. That's what the article said. And I know you guys have had a tough time over there, and hopefully it's getting turned around. But anyways, it was just kind of funny in context of what you said.
I have a friend whose headquarters is in Mexico City, and she's 35, young, Caucasian. And she says, if you stay in the city center, you stay in safe areas, you'll never have a problem.
Yeah, and I think that's true just about everywhere.
Yeah.
And the reality is, these articles, you know, who knows?
But it is a paradox when you think of Mexico and security, and then you think of just how far ahead they are in technology compared to us.
Yeah.
And people are saying, you know, on Fox News and CNN, like, our students are so far behind in science and technology. Yeah, well, when you have people like the FAA saying you need a 333 exemption to fly as a student, and then that the person, you know, an instructor can't take over in emergency situations. It's just like, that's why we're so far behind, because you have people who don't know what they're talking about telling other people to do things that don't make sense.
It's blind just leading the blind, as they say.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. But now there are a lot of industry stakeholders in there. And I know DJI is pushing through Brendan Schulman. He's done a lot of good stuff through MicroArc. I think we're all going to see how it unfolds here this summer. And it's either going to be amazing and make a lot of people happy and really instantly progress this industry, or it's going to piss people off more, and we're just going to see more and more problems.
And we hope that doesn't happen. We're going to do our part to
Yeah.
Keep that from happening.
And something that I want to say, Rob, and some people have called me the FAA rebel. I don't see myself like that. I don't. I just think that it's common sense. We've got to have common sense regulations to allow the industry to progress, to truly keep people safe, but also, you know, allow this economic boom to flourish, because I really think that there is no other industry that will have the economic impact that this industry will have.
Yeah.
So,
well, hopefully 107 takes us a long ways towards making that happen.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, what I, you know, my point is I would like to see the FAA come together with people who are really just about flying. There's no bias or business decisions, you know, in it. It's all about safety. You know, like, there are so many things in the 333 that are not in there that would cause someone to crash. And I'm saying that, and they're not in 107 either. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we really need to bring in true professionals, people who do this all the time, and they're a professional because they have extended experience and have had extended success, not people who post a bunch of HDR photos. And
or who flew jets in the military.
Yeah, thanks for that moral support there, Rob. Anyway, guys, that's going to do it for us today. Thanks for listening to my rant. I want to hear your thoughts on the industry. Where do you think the industry is headed? What are your predictions? I want to hear them. Ask DroneU.com, and we're going to play them in an upcoming episode. What are your predictions for the industry this year? What do you think will happen with the FAA 107? What are we going to see? Anyway, my name is Paul.
I'm Rob.
And this is Ask DroneU.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.